You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, we fix it. There we go. All right, let's restart that. Chris Manning, Josh Link, salute to you. Very excited as we're getting going here on a Saturday afternoon. This is a very dicey situation for me. Let's restart. Chris Manning, Locked On Cavs, right at Diamond Up Rocks, SB Nation's Fear the Sword. Big news in the Cavs world today. Darius Garland, 5-year extension, the biggest deal in Cavs franchise history. Secondly, Ricky Rubio is coming back. Thirdly, Raul Neto and Robin Lopez coming in as depth signings. Big moves for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Still the Colin Sexton stuff out there. This is going to be the bonus show for Locked On Cavs. So if you're joining us for the first time, Monday through Friday, we do an episode. It's Evan Damrell and I. This is going to be a little bonus weekend episode. If you have questions, drop them in. I'll answer them as we go. But a lot to talk about. And I think there's only one place to start. And that's with Darius Garland. Darius Garland has signed a 5-year extension, $193 million. Could go up to $213 based on his All-NBA status going forward. There are escalators in that contract. That is pretty standard as far as rookie contracts go for a guy that is this good. This is a full 5-year deal. There are no options. This is just straight 5 years. Darius Garland, if we think about this way, is now under Cavaliers control as under contract for the next 6 years. The last year of his rookie deal is next season. His extension kicks in. You have him under control for 6 years. That's a really good place to be for an all-star point guard at 22, who's already top 10 at his position, is on his way up. Great signing, no notes, deserves every single dollar. It's a good piece of business. Think about it then. They also have Evan Mobley in year two. Just getting started, really. Year two of his rookie contract, you'll have the inside track to keep him. When his rookie contract comes up, you'll have restricted free agency. You'll have the ability to offer him the most money. That's great. You have Jared Allen, who's got 4 years left on his 5-year deal that he signed last summer at a very reasonable $20 million a year. You have all these guys, very young in their careers, in a very good spot, and this is your base. This is your base here. This Darius Garland extension, as much as it's about him getting the money he deserves, him getting all of the money that I think they had to give him to get this done. I think this puts you in a position where you now have your foundation and it's about figuring out where you go. How do the Cavs build around this? Is there a Sexton sign and trade to make this summer? Does re-signing him make sense? How do you play this out as you're looking at your cap situation going forward and how that is going to grow? How do you surround these guys with the best role players possible? Does Agbaji fit that? Does Okoro end up fitting that? You know, are there other guys you're going to target in free into your trades down the line to go fit around this situation? These are your three franchise pillars. You have them in place now. Yes, I know last year, I think for them and for their fan base ended disappointedly. You have these guys now to really help you escalate to a higher level. And that is just a really, really good place to be. There's not very many situations in my mind in the league right now that are better set up than the Cavs. They have some flexibility going forward. Not limitless, but some. They have most of their picks. And they have three really good players, which is the most important part. You have Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen. You're in a really, really good spot. And there's not really a whole lot you can look at and critique about. Maybe we'll see how Mobley evolves and all that stuff. But you have to feel really good about this if you're the Cavs. We had Wokestar in the chat asked about the escalator details. It's all NBA. It's pretty standard stuff. This is going to be something where if he makes multiple All-NBA teams over the course of his contract, then depending on the year, he'll get more money. But that would escalate it. They'll plan for that and all that stuff. But it's pretty standard. Make some All-NBA teams. You get paid a higher level if you prove yourself to be, you know, one of the six best guys at your position in a given year. You get a little bump in the contract for that. Very standard for this kind of rookie scale contract as we look at it. Before we go on to the Rubio stuff, which there's a little more to chew on there, I just want to note that I think Darius Garland full stop, deserves every single dollar that he's getting here. All-star last season, 22 on his way up, 21 points, 8.6 assists. A phenomenal season for him. Really established himself as one of the best point guards in this point guards in the league, frankly. Key to everything the Cavs were doing. I don't think there's any notes as far as him not deserving this or not. You know, maybe you look at it and say, okay, he's got to stay healthier going forward. You could certainly say that, I think, but this guy's incredible. And the level he hit last year, if that's like the baseline of where he's going to be going forward, that's a guy you're absolutely thrilled, I think, to give all this money to, build your identity with, and keep building with going forward, and making him, again, one of your three franchise pillars. This is, you know, there's more work to be done, I think, if you're the Cavs. There's more stuff to figure out, but this is a massive deal. You have him. It takes care of a lot of your other things, and it's going to inform the other decisions you make. As we go here, and as they build, this is going to be about, okay, we're surrounding Darius, we're surrounding Evan, we're surrounding Jared. How do we maximize those three guys? And in particular, I think Garland and Mobley, and you're trying to maximize what they do and how to bring the best out of them, lessen their workload at times, but really accentuate what they do and then cover for them where they need some cover defensively, I think, particularly for Garland. But you did the hard part. You got the really good guys. The Garland pick looks great, obviously, now. You know, maybe the started out slow the rookie year, all that stuff, but this is a bona fide all-star, a guy you should expect to continue rising as we go here. Absolutely looks like a slam dunk, and no notes again on this contract. All right, so if you have any Garland questions, Robin Lopez questions. We got actually more comments about Robin Lopez and Darius Garland so far, which is interesting. Ricky Rubio or Raul Neto, drop them in the chat. I'm Chris Manning. If you're just joining us from the Locked On Cavs podcast, also you can find my writing at Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation for the Sword. Let's turn to Ricky Rubio. So Ricky Rubio is going to come back to the Cavs. 3-year contract, I believe $18 million or so. 3-year deal. Possible he could be signed and traded back. We'll get into the roster crunch the Cavs have here to navigate shortly. But the last year of Rubio's deal is non-guaranteed, which makes sense considering his age, considering he's coming off the second torn ACL in one knee, which is tough. But this makes a ton of sense. If you listen to the pod or you read anything from Fedor or Rousseau or myself or Evan or whoever, this was pretty clear that this was the Cavs' plan A for backup point guard. They wanted to bring him back. They cannot say enough nice things about what Rubio provided them, not just on the court last year, but in the locker room and as a leader and as kind of a culture guy in this organization. And I think that this stuff absolutely does matter. It's very reasonable money. I think using part of your mid-level exception to go get Rubio, you know, especially if you weren't in the DeLon Wright race and he'd pick somewhere else and, you know, Tyus Jones goes back to Memphis at 15 a year, you couldn't pay those kind of contracts. This is a very logical place to go at backup point guard. Even if you have some concern with what he's going to look like coming off the ACL, what he's going to look like as things go forward, I think this is a pretty reasonable amount of money, and that last year non-guaranteed gives you a little bit of an escape hatch if you need to hit it, if you had a trade or whatever at that point in time. That's something Kobe Altman, if you look at the way he structures contracts, likes to do. Larry Markkanen, you know, has a partial guarantee in his last year. He signed that last summer. Jetty Osman, who we'll talk about because he factors into this a little bit, has a non-guaranteed last year of his contract, which functionally makes him an expiring contract this year. Now, how they bring back Rubio, there's two ways they can do it. They could sign him directly as a free agent, and he could be signed with the mid-level exception. That's standard way to do it. I think whether it's a sign and trade or not, that's going to be where the money comes from. If it's via a sign and trade, this would be the way you clear a necessary roster space. Right now, the Cavs have 15 guys signed with Lopez, Abaji, Neto and Rubio all joining in free agency. So you got a full roster right there. Colin Sexton's still out there. Unless they're trading him for stuff that's not going to be on the roster, even if they were to sign and trade him for like one other guy, they have to clear a roster spot now to make that work. There are ways you could just cut someone and do that. Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens have non-guaranteed deals. But I think those depth pieces matter more to what JB Bickerstaff wants than some of the other things you have. So I look at Dylan Windler, I look at Jetty Osman, and I think let's see what happens with those guys as they're going forward here. There's a couple ways you could approach moving on from them. You could combine them for $11.4 million. Sign and trade them for one player that makes about that money. Terrence Ross is in that salary range, stuff like that. Don't know if that's where they'll go. There's way you could do that. The cost gets a little tricky there if they're trying to stay under that $150 million luxury tax line. And that's that. The sign and trade option would be to send one of them, I would guess Jetty, to Indiana in a sign and trade. You take back Rubio and you get him in a sign and trade. You just send Osmond back as a salary dump. You make it work. Maybe you grease their wheels with like a second round pick and you go from there. I think it is right to identify Jetty as this guy because it's clear that Bickerstaff doesn't totally trust him. I think he is behind other guys in the wing rotation. He's also, I think, in terms of a pure salary dump, a way for other teams to clear more money than Windler's. That's just the reality of his contract. He just hasn't developed and worked out, I think, the way the Cavs sort of hoped it would. And it's clear that with this coaching staff, I don't think there's a total trust in Jetty in that situation. The tricky part of a sign and trade is that it would hard cap you, and that limits the maximum amount of money you could spend. I think 150, 156, I believe, is the tax apron, which is the hard cap limit. I don't think the Cavs are going into the luxury tax at this point in time. It's not really something you do when you're just inching up towards making the playoffs, not even really talking about real contention yet. You want to, it doesn't make sense from a financial perspective. That's just how these businesses work. You only pay the tax when you're like really in that championship window and want to maximize that window. You could get there in 3, 4, 5 years, and then you could, I think they would pay it. But right now, it's just not what teams historically do as far as paying the tax at this point in time. So I think they're going to stay under that 150. It then becomes hard to just kind of squeeze all of this in a Sexton extension or whatever underneath the apron. The Rubio thing is pretty, it fits the parameters of a sign and trade. This can't be announced until July 6th. So I think it's possible. I don't know if it's necessarily the best option because it does just limit some of your flexibility to some degree. But I think $150 million in total salary is really what the Cavs are going to pay. If you look at their salary books now, they're not super far away from that. And there's other ways they could shed money. You know, you could move on from Caris LeVert in some way and take back a smaller salary. You could do other stuff and figure that out. Sexton could sign as qualifying and you'd be well under, but I don't think that's going to happen. You're kind of just in a spot now where I think you're staying under $150 million in total, and it's about how do you maximize squeezing under that right now. Before, with the minimums on the deal right now, including Sexton's, a lot of the 7.2 right now, the Cavs have about, without Sexton, it's like $13 million in space under the tax. The apron's at a little six more than that, but they're going to stay, I think, under $150 million or so. So, you know, that's $6 million to $7.4 million Jetty Osmond salary. If you're looking at avoiding paying the tax, avoiding kind of max, kind of paying the tax for really no reason here other than just to do it, I guess, and this is not how these businesses work. It's kind of in a position where that's really, to me, the number you're looking at. If you add that 7.4 to the 6.2, that's what, 13.6? That gives you some wiggle room there to kind of figure that out. And then you add another 7 to that, that's like $20-something million for Colin Sexton or a contract of that size. So you can get up to $20 million in that sense and figure that out. Just quickly on Raul Nato and Robin Lopez. If you guys have questions, by the way, drop them now. We're going to go for another 5 to 7 minutes. Questions about Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Nato, Lopez, Rubio, whatever. Ask your questions, and I'll get to them here. We're going to do a full episode on Monday and talking about the Garland extension, talking about Rubio and all that stuff. There's a lot for Evan and I to get into, but it's a 4th of July weekend, so I'm just doing this live to give you guys something to tune into and talk about here. Nato and Lopez, to me, are just very good depth signings at point guard and center, respectively. They just make a lot of sense. Lopez is an upgrade over your Moses Brown minutes from last year, right? Like, this is just a more stable guy to have and a trusted guy than what you got from Moses Brown last year if and when Jared Allen suffers an injury again. If you need to start Robin Lopez a couple games, I think you can do it. It can work. Nato, particularly, is maybe going to matter more just because Rubio's probably not going to play at the start of the season. He tore his ACL December 28th of last year, remember, in New Orleans. Didn't play, obviously, play after that for the Pacers after the Cavs traded him in the LeVert deal. you're in a situation where you're going to need a point guard, and maybe Colin Sexton is back and he fills some of those minutes, but I think it makes sense to go get a guy like this just to fill some minutes, and I think figuring that out with Nato makes a ton of sense. Rubio's just not going to play right away. He's just not. So this is a good insurance. I think this roster now, obviously, again, is at 15 guys, 16 if you include Sexton. There's just another move to make here. Osman at that $7.4 million number that is functionally an expiring contract is very clearly the thing that I would look at as how you're going to shed someone here. Maybe Windler, but Osman just kind of would be more logical if you're trying to save the most money possible and create the most amount of flexibility possible right now. And the sign and trade with him going to Indiana makes a ton of sense. You could dump him otherwise and avoid the to him to either Indiana or San Antonio, or maybe there's a team with a trade exception that would take him with the second round pick, and you could clear the money that way. But there's something to be done there, and we'll see where that is. Okay, let's take some questions. Greg Schwartz, friend of the program. Should the Cavs sniff around a Donovan Mitchell trade? And I'm going to say no. I think maybe you have the meeting, just like you have the Kevin Durant meeting. But like the package for Mitchell is all of your stuff and all of your things just thrown in there. They're probably asking for they're going to ask for one of your really good young players and all of your picks and all of your swaps and all that stuff, because you don't have the stuff to really go play around with there. Him and Garland would be obviously a very dynamic backcourt. There's a lot of defensive issues, I think, there in terms of the size and the perimeter. I think Mitchell's really good, but I also don't think the Cavs have the package to really get in that conversation. I think if the Cavs are honestly going to make a trade in the future for someone else, it's not going to be star chasing. It's going to be really, really good high-end role players. It's going to be look what Boston has done with their trades. They get Malcolm Brogdon. They've gotten Derek White. They signed Gallo in free agency. They brought back Horford. It's stuff that is maybe sometimes high dollar signs, but they're not aiming for all-star, superstar level guys. They're getting just really competent players at things they need. And that to me is the blueprint more for trades going forward with Cleveland. You know, maybe whatever happens with Sexton is kind of the swing with what could happen here. Maybe they sign and trade him for a position of need. I think Keldon Johnson in San Antonio would be a really great fit with what Cleveland needs. Is that available to them? Do they try to run it back and look to move on from him later? Or do they just believe he fits really well here? And that goes, these are all very possible, but I don't think a big star hunting trade a la Donovan Mitchell, as Greg alluded to, is really a good thing. Okay, let's go to friend of the program, Josh Link. He says he loves the Lopez signing. I agree. This is a really, really good... this is a very, very good signing to me because, A, it's minimum. You didn't go spend actual resources on a backup center. I think that would have been a waste. I don't think using your MLE in a backup center when you have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and frankly, Kevin Love could play some five-out center if you really need him to. It's just not a good use of resources to me. I think if you look at what you did here, it's you go get a vet, a good vibes guy, already having fun tweeting about Cedar Point and stuff. I think you look at him and you say, hey, start for us if Jared Allen's out. We'll play minutes if we're playing a team that has a bigger front court. You know, you're playing in Minnesota one night. You know, we're going to need your minutes to just kind of match up with Gobert and Towns and Naz Reid and handle that. And you can make him work. He's a guy that can eat some minutes, lessen the load you're going to ask of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley and these guys over the course of an 82-game season as you're trying to make a real playoff run. This is just a really good signing. I think it makes a ton of sense. Okay. So this is a good question. Tony Brown asks, is it a Kobe Altman thing always doing things quietly, or does this just come from with the Cavs naturally? I think it's both. Kobe Altman, I think if the best way to understand him is sort of as a guy that comes from USA Basketball and as a guy that comes from a finance background, he doesn't say a lot even when he talks, and I think he should talk to the media more. I'm just pro, give me media availability, give me access, but he doesn't always say a lot. And the stuff he does is usually pretty quietly. I don't think they leak a lot. I talk to people in the organization, as do a lot of other people on the beat. You don't always get a ton of stuff, and then you're trying to ask other teams what they think the Cavs are doing. And I think reporting that way can be often very tricky because sometimes it's just based on who you talk to. your information flow with some of that can be very tricky. So yeah, they're pretty quiet. I mean, the marketing thing kind of came out of nowhere. The Rubio thing kind of came out of nowhere. Like, they're pretty buttoned up in that sense. There's not a lot of leakage. But I also think that's an organizational thing. I think, you know, you go back in the Dan Gilbert ownership era, like, this is an organization where, like, a lot of stuff comes out. When LeBron was here, the stuff coming out felt very like LeBron coming out that way via the guys on the beat at that time, McMenamin, Lloyd, Chris Haynes, Joe Varden. Like, it was leaked out through that way and not so much Cav stuff. And then Kobe is also just a very distinctly different personality than David Griffin, who, like, gives interviews to blogs. If I saw him, he would say hi to me in chat. Like, it's just, like, a very different vibe as an executive. Let me take a sip of water real quick. And I think that sets the tone for, like, not a lot of stuff happening. So that is my guess as far as we go here. Okay. Let's take one last question. So we got two questions about Colin Sexton. Number one from Miller Mania 22108. Hey, man, have there been any updates on Sexton talks or extension? And then Mitchell Winters asked, what's going on with Sexton? So, like, honestly, this is where we're at. Colin Sexton has two teams with cap space right now. The Spurs and the Pacers. Those are the teams with cap space right now that he could go seek an extension, a contract offer from, sign it, take it back to the Cavs, they can match or not. I can't speak to how interested those teams are. I don't know. The Pacers have weirdly been the betting favorite on Sexton for a little bit. Does that mean anything? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. They were like plus 200 for the best next Sexton team if it wasn't the Cavaliers like a couple days ago. You could look to sign and trade him to other teams. People have talked about like Dallas as a sign and trade option. But what does Dallas have to give to Cleveland that's really going to make that worth their while, right? What does Dallas have, unless they're going to trade all their good role players, that's going to make work for Cleveland? I think ultimately the way to frame this stuff with Colin Sexton is the Cavs are not going to, if he's going to go, it's not going to be for nothing. They're going to get something back here because he was their first pick of this rebuild, this renaissance. They have to, they're not in the position as an organization to just like let someone like this go. He's good. I think he's honestly underrated in some sense. I think the thing is, do they re-sign him? And if they do, I don't think that, it's a lock that he's like back, but I think it would be interesting to just see how they would use him. I think it would tell you that like they just want to at least hold on him, and it's better than one to get out there. But I don't know what his market's like, and I don't know if this is going to drag or not, and how this all kind of goes. Maybe some of these other teams are holding out cap space to help facilitate other deals, and they don't want to eat up their cap space this time. There's also a lot of other free agents still out on the market, both RFA and UFA, that are interesting. So it's kind of an interesting market at where we're at right now. I think it's still more likely than not that he's back, but it's not by much, and we'll see where this goes. I don't totally know where this ends up. Again, they play things very close to the vest. You can, in talking to people like as much as you can, it's just you're trying to figure it out. A sign and trade with the Spurs, though, like getting like Keldon Johnson back would make like a lot of sense, or Devin Vassell. Like, that's the kind of thing that I would look at. If you're going to make a trade, it's going to be for something that fills a need for you, brings something back in return there. And he's not going to walk for nothing. That's just not how this is going to work for Cleveland. Okay. We'll end on this. Where did I see this? Okay, Tony Brown asked, how much of a role does JB have in these small signings like Lopez, Nato, or is this all Altman and Co? It's never just Kobe Altman, Mike Gainsey in the front office. The Cavs have assistant coaches, for instance, that have had connections to Raul Nato. I think it's Antonio Lang, if I'm remembering correctly, had him in Utah. There's an assistant, it was either him or JJ Outlaw, I can't remember off the top of my head, that had him in somewhere else and really connected with him. And push from JB has connections with guys. Like, this is all how this works. This is all just kind of a organizational thing. They have multiple departments. Like, they have scouts. They have an analytics guy who's also their cap guy. They have their front office. They have the coaches. Like, all of these guys are providing input. I think Kobe is ultimately the decision maker. But you take input from your coaches. You take input from your assistant coaches who have been other places and know guys around the league, right? This isn't just done in isolation in a vacuum by one guy. This is a very much a situation where it is a collective. Kobe Altman is going to make that final decision, but it is just about what other input comes in, whose opinion they input, and what the different things they value. And some of that is unclear to me, right? Like, I don't know how much totally the Cavs value analytics. I don't know how much they totally value, like, the assistants offering insight, you know? Was there someone that, like, Luke Walton, the new assistant coach, former head coach at two spots, like, was there someone he liked that he offered insight on? Like, some of this is unclear as we kind of look at it, but it's not just a one-man decision-making process. It is organizational with one guy ultimately making the final decision, but with input from lots of people. That's how this works. Okay, we're going to end there. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you're listening on audio form, hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit subscribe. Hit that bell notification. We'll be back on Monday talking about Darius Garland, talking about Ricky Rubio. Evan will be back with me, my co-host, Evan Damerill. But so much happened since we dropped the Friday episode that I felt I had to come on, do this live, talk about it. And I'll be writing about it as well. I'll look for a piece in the coming days at Dime on UpRocks about the Cavs' options and where they can kind of lay this out going from here. It's a really interesting time for this franchise. The big news, obviously, Darius Garland signs that extension, but Rubio's back. They signed Nato. They signed Lopez. There's a roster squeeze going on now with this Colin Sexton situation. A lot of fascinating work still to be done. Expect a couple more busy days here. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. It's been a lot of fun. Sorry for the audio issue at the beginning. And, yeah, be well. Stay hydrated. I'm going to go to a Guardians game tonight, sit outside, enjoy some of the sun. Hope you guys get to do the same.